Okay, so what we're going to do, Chad, very quickly, is, Chad, if you have any questions for us, please throw them our way, and then I'm going to spend just a few minutes telling these guys about what they can expect in Palace of the Red Pasha, and then I'm going to close up shop. So, Chad, do you have any questions for any of the players or myself? Yes, Trent, you were going
to... Well, we're waiting for them to put in their questions. I have one for you.
Okay.
Based on one... the thing with stuff that I haven't mentioned yet. Earlier, you mentioned that this really isn't, this is not a campaign for beginners, either for parties or DMs. And so what I would like to know is, would you have run this with us before Tyranny of Dragons?
No. Nope. Definitely not. Because I didn't have enough. I built up trust with those of you who played with me in the, in the D&D Next campaign of, a Dragonspear Castle and stuff like that. And some of you I had trust in various places. I've been friends with John for a while. Trent, I've known you for a while beyond this. Sod as well. Rob is a little newer, from Tyranny time. Before that. So... No, I needed to make sure that we established, because Tyranny of Dragons, although it has complexity to it, is a heroic, we're all building up to fight the big bad. There's no question who the big bad is. We're stopping a cult.
It's fairly straightforward.
Yeah, there were questions about which people you want to honor. Obviously, Feithley got pissed at the Harpers or whatever. But there's a general sense of, the big enemy is this. And so, no, I needed to make sure that the party had a good sense of trust with each other. Plus... I needed to know it was possible I would have played through it and I would have been a couple of these players would not dig it. Whereas you folks I knew would be fine. I knew everyone here would dig it. Actually, one thing that gave me just a little taste of that was the Red Wizards of Thay section towards the end of Tyranny of Dragons, because that has a little bit of the creepy factor. And it was interesting to me to watch all of you dealing with, because they had weird experiments and nightmares, and it was a little, so it gave me a little bit of a hint of it. But that's why the whole crew I thought was capable of managing it. But yes, that is my answer. Let's see. Question: what happened to Rictavio's pet saber tooth? Answer: Rictavio still has that saber tooth because it travels with him. What he will use the saber tooth for going forward is another question. As to why it was not with him in the battle, he does need a guard. And remember, what you folks didn't get a chance to talk too much about was the fact that there's a big aftermath in Barovia because Strahd sent a bunch of people to mess places up. Kresk is hammered. The Wizard of Wines is a big mess. There were a lot of people who got killed. There was a lot of stuff that went down. The village of Barovia is, not quite razed to the ground, but there's a lot of people killed. It was bad. So, the Sabretooth needed to be around also to guard others. So it still exists and is around and is guarding Rictavio's holdings, perhaps even his tower. So, but I will bring him back as a character in, Eberron for no reason. No, I'm just kidding. Let's see. Live Suing asks, question: do you feel that any of you have grown in any way as a result of this campaign, as players or otherwise? No, zero growth has occurred.
Can I start with this one?
Yes, please.
I feel like, first of all, I love this question because I've said many times before that my D&D experience is limited prior to joining this group and doing this show. And actually, the idea early on when I joined for Dragon Queen was, okay, I'm going to play D&D now. Now what? Now what do I do? Literally, what do I do? Because the concept of doing it made sense. It's I knew what playing D&D means, but the theory behind it, I was completely just I played a video game and I played some Magic the Gathering, and once in a while I tried to play D&D and it was a gigantic train wreck. Almost all the time, to the point where I remember playing at camp one time and we were using a shampoo bottle to make checks flipping it and deciding which side. I don't know. We didn't have dice, and I didn't know the dice that you needed. We were 12.
Okay.
It was the stupidest thing.
It was for a improvisation, though. I'll give you that.
It was really dumb.
But wait, was it if it landed really on the cap, dumb. It was a critical hit? Like, what was
the... Yes, probably something as idiotic as that.
A critical fail is it blows up in your face.
Yes, if it gets all over your character sheet, it's instant death.
So you're using nuts and twigs for your character sheet. Paper there, you know?
I think I made like a ninja or something, and I was like, is this the thing in D&D? And they were like, sure, I don't know. It's just like, whatever. The weird, honestly, I had nightmares about it to this day. So when I was asked to do this, I definitely approached it with like, okay, I'm actually going to commit to it this time, and I feel like these are people who have a sense of what they're doing, and I'll be able to learn from them. And I'm still learning from them. And coming out of Rise of Tiamat, I've learned so much about what makes this game so great and why people love it so much and have loved it and are coming back to it. And actually, again, I think my original comparison still holds a lot of water and a lot of truth, which is it's like showing somebody, you know, a sword fighting scene, you know, from some swashbuckling epic, and then showing them Olympic fencing and going, these are not the same thing. This like literally, you know, they could not be more different, because one is a sport that has rules and you learn to play it and you either get better at it or you don't. And the other is a ballet. It's a dance, and you have to, there is no moving out. Like if you move outside of the dance, somebody gets hurt, somebody falls, somebody collapses, you're not there for somebody. The nice thing about the way this works is that you can learn the rules, you can learn how to play it better, but then you also grow as a player by knowing, like we've talked about throughout the entire stream, where the edges are and how you can have fun within the rules by doing stuff that maybe other players don't expect, that maybe the DM doesn't expect, maybe that you didn't even expect to do. And that in all the ways that I absolutely love about what we've done for these last three campaigns has really expanded my horizons as far as what I thought D&D was and what it can be and how you can play it. And boy howdy, if you are at all interested in playing D&D, if you have watched any of these campaigns and thought, man, I'd like to do that, find awesome, cool, interesting, like dynamic people who also play this game to play with, and get everybody on your level, because that will make it such a better experience. I really, truly believe it. And also bring in new people, bring in people who don't know it, who are willing to, like yeah. I did, go, I know nothing, I am willing to learn, and let's see what happens. Because you will also learn a lot from the experience. It really has been quite profound. And I'm leaving this campaign knowing a lot more about playing it, but also what it actually is, which I really appreciate.
That's awesome, and I'm glad to hear that. Before the others answer, yeah, Shadowed, I mean, that's one of the points of community D&D and of even D&D with viewers, but I mean, the regular campaign like community D&D is you have people that came to it through different sources. You have Shadowed, who of course is DM before, but you've got, you know, Rock God and Triffid and Echo Off X5 and Hoodie. And these are all people who had not played together before. And a lot of them I played with as D&D with viewers and so on. And that campaign's been a lot of fun. They have a nice chemistry with each other. They've had a lot of fun playing. It's been really enjoyable to watch. So I've really been, you know, enjoying watching that campaign play out. And it's exactly what I wanted for the channel, was more of that kind of thing. So Tren Sajan, did you grow at all from the experience of the campaign, or was nothing learned? Not a single lesson.
Nothing was learned. No points awarded. No. I always find something out of these.
City of Dust covering both of us. Hey, Sticker.
This one was actually kind of a primer on subtlety in terms of role playing. I mean, I've left my hack and slash days behind me until it's time to hack and slash. But that's, you know, very codified circumstances. But I think the mood that was evoked here, and learning from actors like Trend and Rob, and even, you know, Saz's not an actor, but he sure brought Alec to life, and Dot too. So everyone here is, you can always learn techniques about how to play a character. So yeah, just kind of riffing off of that, but this one was also, you know, the gothic, it was more of a mood. It's not, you know, Tyranny of Dragons, like ours, it's fairly straightforward. This one was a lot more atmospheric, and I think that was really brought to life, and it was good to take that into the games I run and other games I play in too. So yeah, it's always something to be learned from good players and a good GM doing their craft, and that's what I took away from this one.
That's awesome. Shadowed, I didn't realize that, Shadowed. He said in chat that you literally started DMing for the first time after watching the start of INB's High Order of the Dragon Queen in 2014-2015-ish. That's awesome, man. It really is awesome. Like, I can spread the gospel of how awesome roleplay is and how much I love this game, you know, that's amazing. These players have really sort of set a... And again, all of the players. My AMI campaign is great. The Esper Genesis campaign is great. D&D with GOG Storm King's Thunder is great. The Emberwind campaign, which we feature on here, is great. Community D&D is great. Like, all of the campaigns, I'm very fortunate.
You hear that, chat? He called us the A campaign. He caught himself, but he did call us the A campaign.
No.
I just want to say that again. He
we aren't the A plus campaign.
You saw it and heard it here. He went, you know, the A campaign. And then he, you know, realized.
You got mocked mercilessly for that during the last ARVCon. You're like, the A team needs to bring in more money than us, said Esper Genesis. So they were like, anyway, Shadow,
so
that's great.
Monetarily
I really
focused.
I appreciate that, though, Shadow. That's awesome. I'm really glad to hear that. Okay, so, Trensad, what did you, if anything, did you grow from this experience?
Dad, go. Okay, so I've never done role-playing for D&D until doing it with Arv. So it's basically me learning how to role-play. And... I'm honest. I'm brutally honest.
Could have fooled me.
Absolutely.
I didn't do
and
any drama in
school
or anything
you've done
like
great.
That.
You've done and great stuff, dude.
Domdor, I was kind of just playing a character. I didn't really role play much. And then Gromnir, we had a backstory and I was able to start like getting used to role playing. And then this is going to someone now, Oleg, who's completely different character. So it's like going from one character to another was interesting. And I've noticed I'm playing two religious based characters, even though I'm not religious.
I noticed
at all.
That too. Yeah.
That's interesting as well. Trying to play something outside your usual mindset. I'm trying to think what else. And the voice, I guess, as well. Like I've never done a voice when playing a character. So that's it's allowed me to. I started my own DM group with Don Cairo, ironically, playing in mime at actual times he can play. That
so you stole him from us, is
yeah,
what
basically.
You're saying.
That's
okay,
what he's saying.
Got it.
Basically,
cool.
Yeah.
Well, we play even
to admit these things
sometimes than you guys because of time.
Frequently,
yeah. And it's allowed me to kind of finally get into DMing, which I really wanted to do for a long time.
Very cool.
And it's been a struggle, but it's been enjoyable.
As for me, yes, because I know that I did some measure of growth, because otherwise I would not have enjoyed the campaign. I would not have enjoyed playing if there hadn't been some measure of growth. For me, a lot of the RP that I do, I draw on stuff that's going on in my life. You know, if I need to be angry, I focus on something that has really pissed me off recently. And, you know, I fuel that, which also gives me a sense of resolution with it in some ways, because instead of bottling it all up and just letting it fester and everything, I have an outlet for it that is creative. And so, you know, anytime that I get into a campaign that I enjoy, it's because of that.
Yeah, and I think if you're RPing without a net, like if you have a character that you set up and you're making stuff up in the moment, the best thing to draw from is to draw from your own life experiences to help you formulate something that is authentic to the character. I mean, the more I look back on the stuff that I did with both Ryuvi and the stuff that I did in this campaign with Mason and Xavier, the more I realize that a lot of the stuff that I built into those characters are bits and pieces of my own life, in different parts of my life while we were playing those campaigns. And you know, some on the one hand that has to do with just sort of like acting exercises and knowing that, you know, if you're writing a story about stuff, it you're always going to have an easier time trying to find the bits and pieces of what make that authentic to you and to someone else hearing it and seeing it if there is some air of authenticity to it. That's not to say that you can't make things up out of the air. People do it every day. But when you're just starting to RP, when you're just starting to create characters, when you haven't done this stuff before, base it off of stuff you know so that you don't have to make it harder for yourself to create something, you know, especially if you want to try to up your own RP game in your own desktop D&D sessions.
Yeah. Okay, a couple more, and then we will wrap the question part, and I'll talk about Kalamshan for a couple of minutes, and then we'll wrap up here. So, question from Saad: what is the backstory of Esmeralda? All right, so I knew some of this before, but I'm going to read some of this because here's the thing about Esmeralda. So first
it's
of all,
like she had a curse or something. That's what was interesting because you accidentally showed that off.
First of all, Esmeralda is a Vistani. And Esmeralda, when she was a little girl, her family kidnapped Van Richten's teenage son, Erasmus, and delivered him into the clutches of a vampire. And even today, years later, she can still hear Erasmus's pleas for mercy. That event haunted her childhood. Van Richten tracked down Esmeralda's family soon after the kidnapping, but not before the Vistani had sold the boy. Though Van Richten could have done them harm, he instead interrogated Esmeralda's mother and father on the whereabouts of his missing son. Satisfied with their answers, he spared their lives before departing with the information they had given him. Esmeralda witnessed Van Richten's act of mercy and was deeply moved by it. At the age of 15, Esmeralda, who was still troubled by what her family had done to Van Richten, ran away from home and tracked down Van Richten 2 years later. Thinking she was a Vistani assassin, he put a sword to her throat and threatened to spill her blood, but Esmeralda convinced him that she genuinely wanted to help him find his missing son, whereupon Van Richten told her the saddest of tales. He had found his son, who had been transformed into a vampire spawn. When Erasmus pleaded to his father for salvation, Van Richten granted his request by ending his existence. And so that was how they first got it started. He kept Esmeralda close to him for a while, but then the vampire hunters got on each other's nerves, and they decided to part for a while and kind of do their own thing. When she bid farewell to Van Richten, she built basically this wagon to carry her vampire-slaying paraphernalia. She was very successful. And on one of her less successful adventures, a werewolf bit off her right leg below the knee. And although she avoided being afflicted with lycanthropy, Esmeralda was sidelined for months. She commissioned a master artisan to craft a prosthetic lower leg and foot. After several tries, he delivered a prosthesis that restored her mobility. Lower leg and foot. She has since adapted well to the false appendage and takes care to hide it from view. She ended up hearing that Van Richten was involved in a hunt for the greatest vampire of all, Strahd. Obviously, herself as a Vistani was interested in this and tracked him down again, and they joined forces again, and you folks know the rest.
She had some kind of special ability or something? Was that explained?
Yeah, but what was the ability? I don't...
I feel it was like a curse or something. She had some kind of curse ability?
Yes, she had the ability to curse, which was basically kind of like a Vistani curse. She could do an evil eye, and she could curse someone that would mean that the target had vulnerability to a type of damage of Esmeralda's choice.
Oh, wow, that's really good.
Yep. Yeah, she was definitely powerful, and I liked the relationship that she built up with Alex. So, that's her backstory. Okay, last question for today is going to be from Shattermage. As a DM, is the ending of the campaign something you take some liberties with as far as the end credit goes? I did some reading ahead in the campaign. What I thought would be the ending was a bit different here. Yes, I can take some liberties, although it's not really that different. Some of the things that are suggested in the campaign, in the adventure book, is it is possible that Strahd never truly dies but is brought back and the fog rolls into Barovia once more. I will fully admit that that is my least favorite kind of story, and it's the, but how long would it last? Like, that to me is a cop-out. Like, either he's powerful enough that, you know, he keeps all contenders off of him, or he gets utterly destroyed, and he gets destroyed in a way that he's not been destroyed before. His brother being reunited with Arena, with Tatiana, the Sun Sword being used to destroy him, the holy symbol of Ravenkind, you put all these things together, these elements have not all been combined together. So in my judgment, the whole, but it was all a dream, is just garbage. And, so...
Screw you, Patrick Duffy.
It's like, yeah, I wake up in Valakine, man, we all had this weird dream where we all killed Strahd.
Because it makes it useless. There's no point
to that. We're gonna have to kill that with Shimon to die kind of nonsense, yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like he's lying dead and then the hand twitches. Shut up. Please. So yes, that's why. But other than that, the ending is basically true. In fact, I did read a section where Irina and Sergei, the ghost of Sergei, returns and basically says, "Thank you for giving us, our freedom at long last." And then they walk off over the parapet, and that's literally what happens. And the fog is destroyed. The dark powers still remain in the Amber Temple, and that's why at the end of this adventure, these guys went off, still looking for the family, and Mason still wants to do vampire hunting with, Von Richten, and, Weller still has, everybody has things they're going to go do. Rude is obviously following after one group of them. Baba Lasaga is still a threat. There's still
that moment
things.
With Rude and Zarama at the very end that you did was really nice.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Thank you. I wanted to make
really
sure
nice coda
brought them back in a little bit to that element, but thank you. Yeah. So this was great. And it was the part of Strahd returning. Yeah, no. Nah. Because he's returned multiple times unless you do all of the things these people did. I don't buy it.
Make sure to put him down for good. Yeah.
Yes.
So there has to be an end point.
There has to be an end point, or it just becomes the true horror is that
Now, okay, here's a question for you, Arv. If we hadn't been so overzealous and we need this, we got all, if it had been a little bit less, would you have left it more of an open ending where,
I think you wouldn't have won, and I think you would have been destroyed. And we would have been having a discussion about how not everything ends happily.
You would have played that out if we had rushed ahead and maybe not been as prepared.
Yes. Cool. Yeah, you really needed all that stuff. If you didn't have Mordenkainen, the Tome of Strahd was hugely important because it gave you information you needed, a little bit about Sergei and company. Mm. You needed, obviously, the Sun Sword. The Holy Symbol of Ravenkind was really helpful. Although, frankly, you didn't even use it the way that I thought you were going to use it, which is as a symbol to actually hold an undead creature like a vampire, say.
It wasn't there for half the battle, technically.
That's true. Think how we found that was one of the most serendipitous things.
Was great. And listen,
into the field, something's weird here, Sean.
Yeah, John and I were man, there's something weird about this place. I feel like we're missing something.
You just found it. And the other thing, too, I want to point out, by the way, that these are all randomly placed based on that reading at the beginning. So you could very easily, for example...
you could have missed that whole thing.
Yeah, in fact, there's a location. Locations are ones that you all went to.
That was right in front of us and we just didn't notice.
Yeah, one reading, it could be that the treasure is in the possession of Vladimir Horngard. Treasure lies in Sergei's tomb. The treasure is hidden in the attic of the Burgomaster's mansion in Valaki. The treasure is inside the head of the giant statue in the Amber Temple. The treasure lies in the beacon of Argenvust Holt. The treasure is inside a model of Castle Ravenloft in the Amber Temple. You remember where you found that? The treasure lies in the shrine of Mother Night in the Werewolf Den. There's all these things that it could have been. And then I love this one. I'm going to read this and get ready, chat, for the reaction of the party. The treasure lies in the crypt of General Krovol Mad Dog Grislek. You have no idea where the F that is. That's in one of the million crypts underneath Ravenloft. That would have been a whole thing, searching for it.
God.
The treasure is in Bobby Lasaga's hut. So there's just multiple places. Oh. Top floor of Van Richten's tower. So these are all things that could have been used. And then there's also...
That's all random.
Random based on the reading that we did. Yeah, and I drew the cards. The Vistani treasure wagon, the graveyard at the River Ivlis crossroads, Casimir's hovel, the master bedroom of Vachter House, where Lady Vachter lives. No, that's not. And also the enemy.
Vachter's on in here.
So Strahd's enemy was Mordenkainen, but it could also have been the Rictavio. It could also, Von Richten, it could also have been the werewolf Zuleika Toranescu. Which would have been really interesting.
That would have been really, yeah.
It could have been Donovich. It could have been that there is no NPC who inspires the characters at all. Could have been Viktor Valakovich. It could have been Stellar Vaktor. So, like, it could literally her. It could have been Casimir. It could have been Sir Godfrey Gwillem, who was the Vladimir's lover, you know, the Revenant, like the Revenant's lover. Mm-hmm. There is a, I swear to God, Sir Klutz, the Phantom Warrior. There is a warrior in here called Sir Klutz.
Wow.
Ismark could have been one of them. Let me see. The Vistani Aragal. There is a character that you never met called Periwimple, who is kind of a sort of a simple-minded, sort of hard to explain, kind of a simple-minded creature that, yeah, it takes a while to explain. Cloven Bellevue, one of the mongrel folk. So there's all these different ones that it actually could have been. And the last thing was where he was going to face you. So Strahd could have faced you in Sergei's tomb or the Hall of Bones or in the chapel or in the study or in the tomb of his father or like in all these different places. And then
these were all set before we started the campaign. Like you
yes,
did this.
And one of them early, was the Mists, I believe, which was the Queen of Spades. And that was awesome because I believe that was that one. And that gave me the option to place him where I wanted. And I wanted him on that parapet because I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
The battle in the parapet with it just so much.
That was really
stuff.
Cool. So, yeah. That was really cool.
Cinematic, baby.
Yeah. So yeah, you play with it, but you move around it.
Oh,
so
yeah, that dude on the parapet with the box, he had the toy, didn't he?
Yeah. And you never met that guy. There was a toy maker called Blinsky who made all these like really creepy, weird toys. And there was a whole little sub thing that you could have done with him if you ever found him, but you didn't. So, you know.
So that dude that was at the parapet where we fought Strahd, that was just one of his toys, or is that Blinsky himself?
The dude on the parapet. Oh, you mean the first time that you came there?
Yeah. When we first, there's a guy, that body that was there.
Yeah, when we went back. There was a corpse.
A corpse, yeah, but you didn't fight, but I don't believe you fought. Did you?
No. It had something. It was had something in his hands, and where and I just like. Ugh.
Right, I need to go check again and see what he was holding, but that was actually one of his servants who had run out in madness and died there. There was going to be, you know.
So it was dead.
Okay. He was dead, yes.
we got tricked.
And he doesn't clean up. It was another red herring.
Sure?
Basically, so. Huh. But yeah, so there was a lot, and yeah, absolutely shattered. I thought they would explore more of it. Again, it helps when they just stumble into the Hall of Bones and, you know, those things. But it was compensated for by the fact that they spent more time in other areas, so I don't think we rushed through it. I think it
and
got
that
plenty
we did
of time.
Oceans, we were doing Oceans 12 or 11.
That's right, the Oceans 12 thing. So I want to say, you know, one last time before I introduce them to just quickly talk about this for 5 minutes, but I want to thank them again for playing in Curse of Strahd. It was a great campaign. It was an honor to DM. Chat, also, I want to thank all of you. I think chat was great through this set of adventures, and I appreciate everyone who came back week after week and month after month and year after year to watch these folks play through it and to really challenge themselves and come through. So it was great. So congratulations to the players. And thank
and
you.
And I think, Arv, you and I think we're going to have to record the ballad of the Swiffer of Hope that Trift just wrote in the chat there.
Yes.
I think we're going to have to record that ballad of the Swiffer of Hope.
Oh, there is
hopefully
one.
She literally just wrote the lyrics.
I didn't
for
listen. Swiffer mighty, that's got to be death metal. Rolling his chat like a god because the must one can't go keeping over laws of metal sleeping.
Unfortunately, if we call it the Ballad of the Swiffer of Hope, we might get sued. So we're going to have to figure out a way to get around that because I'm pretty sure that's trademarked. Anyway.
That's great, Triffid. I love that.
real quick, Arv, thanks for running this because it was awesome. And you did a fantastic show.
100%.
Thank you. It's my great pleasure.
Being able to schedule everything around everything that you do is got to be a struggle. So thank you for playing.
Sometimes, but it was. But I appreciate really having this crew. And thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I will remember to be more brutal next time. So we will be make sure
damn
gloves
it, John.
Are off. You know, every second. In chat, as he was saying that, everyone in chat is like, "What are you doing, John?" Like,
I regret asking the question now.
Anyway.
He doesn't have to do anything to me. I just have to fail my rolls, which is pretty much the only two. So.
Does chat always forget that I'm always like the distance warrior, the distance killer?
killer.
Yeah.
I don't go to face to face. That's Sod's job.
Well, I think next campaign.
I don't care.
Next campaign, make John the tank. John the tank.
All right. I want to show you all where we are going to be headed next. And as a reminder for those of you who don't know, this is the Palace of the Red Pasha campaign. We're going to be playing it actually with these four guys here who are going to be playing because they all played in the Tyranny of Dragons campaign. I expect this is a mini campaign, really. Even with this crew, it's a mini campaign. I don't expect it to last more than 3 months. And when that is done, we will then be moving into Eberron, which I'm super excited about. Look, lightning rails, warforged, airships, artificers. Like, I mean, what is there not to like? Dragon marked. It's noir. It's sick. I'm super excited for it. But we're going to do Palace of the Red Pasha. And as Tren just kindly showed you on his map, it takes place here. To the south of where they have gone before. I'm going to expand this a little bit. So up to the north of the map that you see on screen right now, you'll see that there is Omn. And those of you familiar with Baldur's Gate will remember that there was a whole expansion about Omn, the city of Omn. I think the throne of, not throne of Bald, Omn, anyway. And the Sea of Swords there is to the west. Right above that is Baldur's Gate. So you basically have Baldur's Gate, the Cloud Mount? What is it? Cloud Peaks, yeah. And then down into Omn, and then down into the Weldeth and Tethyr. And at the very bottom of that is Kalimshan. And they are going to be going to Kalimsport. Now, Kalimsport is really interesting because it is the first time that we will be having a place that is really has a lot of Arabic influence and Middle Eastern influence. So this will remind you quite a bit. It is a fantastical place, so I don't want to suggest that I certainly would not be arrogant enough to be like, it's like you're in the Ottoman Empire. Okay, it's that is not the case. But it will remind you quite a bit of those sort of desert structures. If people are like, want to get hyped for this, I would recommend taking a look at work by Saladin Ahmed called, oh my goodness. I actually read this book and loved it. What the heck was... All right, hold on. I'll find it in just 1 second. I should know this too, right off the top of my head.
While you're looking that up, I will say that
I got it.
One thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say that you know, Fifley's from probably further south than many, but he's heard of Kalimshan and he's heard of the jungles of Chult. So for him, that is a desert and a place full of undead people, right next to each other. So he's getting some serious. Going back to Fae, you know, kind of flashbacks. Yep, yep, he's a little twitchy about going down there.
We're going back to Fae, so it is, yes, Throne of the Crescent Moon, I found it. It is really good. Very, very well written and very fast-paced, and I recommend it. And so that will remind you a little bit of what this feels like. Another one that I would want to recommend is a friend of mine, the former co-host of Speculate, the podcast we run here, which is the Song of the Shattered Sands, 12 Kings of Sharakai, and then there's a number of others. That's a great series, too. Brad's a good professional writer, and you'll get a chance to kind of get a sense of that same sort of feel. I happen to really like that kind of environment as well, and this is going to be also a high-level campaign. The players are going to begin at level 15, and they will be... Circumstances will suggest that they should go down to Kalimshan because there is some unfinished business with a certain Severin, the head of the Cult of the Dragon, which the party, of course, defeated. Now, Severin is dead, but what about his people? And he is originally from Kalimshan and Kalimsport, and so that is where this adventure is going to take place. So the party is going to be heading down there. So what we're going to do in January when we play this next is I'm going to ask the party... I'm going to ask the players to basically be thinking over the next month or so, to be thinking about what this will be taking place a year, basically, after the events of Tyranny of Dragons. So what has Fifley been doing? What has Gromnir been doing? What has Cade been doing? What has Ryuvi been doing during the time that you have had this year off? I'm particularly interested to see whether Ryuvi has made his tower into a proper wizard's tower at this point. I want to know if Cade is the king of the city. I want to know if Gromnir has, made sure that he's mined the best library of all time with the aid of his cousins. And I am, particularly interested to see if Fifley and his boyfriend are,
You don't want to know.
You don't have to get into those details, all right?
Yeah, I would. I guarantee you I would.
When not involved in that activity. Yeah, exactly.
All there's to do is eat and sleep and mate and eat. And where do I sign up?
So it's going to be level 15. It's going to be great. And it will be a mini campaign set in Kalimsport. And that will then probably be, from my point of view, the end for these characters as far as formal adventuring. I think this will be it for them. This will probably bring them up to maybe 16, 17. And then that'll be it. I mean, I guess I won't completely close the door, but in my mind, that would pretty much wrap it up. and then we would move to Eberron, which will be new characters and a whole new thing, and, you know, halflings with barbarian halflings with their dinosaur mounts, and you know, lightning rails with elementals trapped inside the train to make it run, and
to do some research.
Ooh, magic punk.
It's so good. The thing I want to say that I'm excited about too, this will be the first time that all of you are going to have a group patron. So you will all be establishing yourselves as a member of a group. And when I say a group, it could be newspaper reporters reporting for one of the newspapers in the land of Eberron. It could be members of the King's Lanterns, which is a secret spy organization. It could be members of a mercenaries guild, basically think Mandalorian bounty hunter crew. It could be even like former members of a division that fought in the war, in the last war, which led to the morning where there was a big apocalypse, and we'll talk about that when we get there. Anyway, so who knows, but you will have a group that you will have to collectively decide what group you want to be in addition to your individual desires. So super cool.
We're going to do hit points, dice rolls, aren't we?
And all that stuff. Yeah. But that'll be later on. But for this one, Pals the Red Pasha, yes. So for our session next month, we will begin the play basically by just having, I'm going to ask how you all are doing it. And I'm going to play it out by talking about how each one finds each other. And it'll be about 3 months and then Eberron. And for Eberron, I always say between each campaign, it's up to whoever wants to stay. I obviously would love these, you know, four players who have been with me on all the campaigns to rejoin. I'd love Dot to be with us. Dot will not be in Pals the Red Pasha because she wasn't in Tyranny and she needs the time anyway, but I'm hoping I can get her back for Eberron. And then I will be looking probably for a sixth player to add. I would love to have six players for this if I can, but we'll see about that. That's not until March or April. So first few months is going to be Pals the Red Pasha. So that's
so the campaign changes, the roles stay the same.
No, he was better this time. It was great.
Any
last words from any of you? I guess I'll start with Rob and move back the other way. Any last words, Rob, or anything you want to promote of yours coming up soon?
Thank you all for watching. Yes. Thank you all for watching, for coming back every time, for being here through all the hours of the campaigns, through the highs and the lows, the adventures, the RPs, the characters coming and going, the crazy stuff that happens, the arguments between the players and each other, the players and the GM and us, their DM and us, and everything that happens. Like, seriously, when I see the chat is really getting into it and enjoying it as much as we are, that's really what makes it so worth doing every single time. Even when I'm feeling down, even when I feel like I don't want to be here, which is very rare, but occasionally I look at these faces and I go, why? No, I'm kidding. But it's of all the people I could have picked, this is the motley
crew. This is the crew.
I ended up with. I mean, you know, this, I don't know what I was thinking. But no, seriously, you guys are incredible. And I appreciate y'all coming through every time to be here and to be excited to see what happens. Absolutely the most heartfelt love and thank yous to everybody involved with making this happen. All the players, Arv as the DM, Dot, Maggie, Don, everybody, just everybody who's been involved in this. Like, it's y'all have made me a better player and a better person, and just, you know, a more of a team sport, which is something I've always had a tough time doing, and, you know, being a group player, doing stuff for the group, not just because I want to do it. Putting this on every time, you know, it seems like it's an easy thing to do, but it is certainly not. And I know there's a lot of work on your end, both, you know, before, during, and after, to make it all happen, as well as everybody who's lent a hand. You know, all of us have at one time or another. I just want to say again, from the bottom of my heart, thank you, three times thank you, because you're all ace, and I look forward to doing more of this as much as I can, for as long as I can. And as far as where I'll be, you can catch me here for more Infinity and Beyond. You can catch me here on this channel for our vocalist, which will have some Christmas cool Carol holiday. Yeah, I was getting to it. I know very well. I've read that more times out loud than I've read in silence in my own space and time. We'll be doing a Christmas Carol here again for the holidays for our vocalist. And you can find me on my channel, twitch.tv/GCDarkSideRob, doing variety game playing there, as well as music production and on my YouTube channel. So y'all are fantastic. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Festivus, all of that. And especially if I'm sure I will see you before the new year, but please have a safe, happy, healthy new year, everyone.
Thank you, Rob. Great stuff. And also thank you for the really, seriously, really great questions. I really appreciated that. That was great. And thank you for doing that and putting those together.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure.
Thank you as well to John. John, same question to you. Anything you want to promote, last words, things you'd like to say?
Did I say Dot? I wanted to thank Dot too. I did say Dot.
Okay. No, you said Dot. Absolutely. You
Maggie,
said
Maggie Dot, and you paused on Don Cairo because you don't care who he is.
Yeah, you were just like that
true.
Guy.
I never
that I know.
Care. And Don knows it too. I love him to death, but I could take him or leave him.
No, I think Rob pretty much summed it all up. It's very heartfelt and true. I'm just gonna ditto his. We do Emberwind. We got one more session. I think we're gonna do this month on the 14th.
Yep. I think that's right.
Assuming everyone can make it, which would be good. No, otherwise, I'm looking forward to Brett Pesha and the return of Cade Marmadas.
Cade Marmadas returns.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. Yeah, I can't wait.
You're the only one who's looking forward to that return. I just want
to. Oh, Ryuvi, you'll love to see him
of
too.
Cade specifically.
Yeah. I'm not looking forward to the. Wait, let's just be clear. I'm not looking forward to the return of Ryuvi's Russian accent because I got so down.
The
with
handoff? Nope. Sorry, handoff. You got it.
No.
Give it to you.
I do not want it. Oh, crap. It is already here.
And Saad, you thought Cade was overpowered before. Now that I'm 15th level,
I already know. You're a rogue. Rogue's already stupidly broken.
Yeah.
I would say it's appropriate for a 15th level character. The fact that I can get advantage on any one foe I want within 30
and
feet anytime I want.
Insane.
Your levels would be so 86. Cute in Kalimsport.
What? That's nothing.
Your levels are cute nothing. In Kalimsport. They are cute.
Anyways, should be a lot of fun. Arvin's always thank you for all this. Gonna be back in the game.
My great pleasure.
Last and looking forward to more adventures with you and hopefully everyone here. Chat, you guys are awesome as well. Thanks so much for sticking around with us idiots as we stumble through our intricately designed campaigns.
Oh man. But it's always fun to see how it's intricately
messed
up.
Oh, it's great fun. That's half the fun, more than half. Yeah.
But thanks, John. Saad, same question to you. Where will we see you next? And any last words and thoughts about this?
Yeah, just as John and Rob said, pretty much everyone, both the players and the people in chat, some of you were really enjoying it, and I could tell. And the amount of great banter that appeared in chat at times was awesome.
Yes.
And just the community like we've built up around this has been awesome. And it's kind of spread out to different campaigns and different, like I've been able to do Emberwind, and then I did Hearts of Wulin with Lowell Francis and Kat and Joyce and Michael, and it's been a blast doing all this. And what else can I say? I'm doing the last episode released till next year for Grumbler's Guide to the Temple of Elemental Evil, where I go through it as Grumbler Grumble Happen, and it's a doozy. But I feel like I could kind of, I'm going to sneak in a lot of behind the scenes stuff, at least in terms of Roll20. If you're interested in seeing how we do things in Roll20, and you just want to see how chaotic it got, I'll be sneaking a lot of that in. Like, we'll go through some of the maps and randomly all the drawings and all the silly things that we had to set up.
But can I just publicly again acknowledge and thank Saad for the behind the scenes work that Saad does on, like, I really consider him like almost an assistant DM with the work that he does on Roll20, with the stuff that he does on Discord and the notes and everything and the maps and like the
Jesus,
token.
Your notes, Saad.
Yeah,
my
no, so really,
goodness.
Saad, thank you very much. I get really,
yeah,
really
and I'll go, I'll go through if you guys want during my Grumbler's Guide. I will go through all my notes. All of it. And Johnny and Rob's like, are you sure that's a lot of notes?
couldn't run everyone without you, buddy.
So
thank you.
I had to keep track of a lot of stuff, and I feel like it helps, especially when you're trying to remember something. I'm still refining, and I think I figured out some really good ways of doing it to make it easier.
I don't know if this is going
to
play.
And I want to spread that. Yeah, you can show them. It's a bit hard to see there.
It's just a black hole. Yeah, just, yeah.
He's still scrolling. He's still scrolling, by the way. He's still scrolling. Still going. Nope. Still going. Still going. Still going. Yep. Still going.
This is just from this campaign.
Yeah. It hasn't there, that's hasn't the end of it. Yet.
And that's what was it? That was from the last session. It was 55 sessions worth of stuff. So.
Yeah, and that also has the side, a little, the how Will and Alec met into that. But no, it's not a 24-hour stream. It's basically same, usually about the same time as Emberwind. Usually 4 hours, maybe sometimes five if I get stuck into it. We may go for a full 5 hours and just go through all the Strahd stuff, all the juicy behind the scenes. But yeah, just it's been a blast, and thank you everyone for letting me join in on this shenanigans.
That was good stuff. Thank you, Saad, as always. Really very much appreciated. And yeah, thanks, man. And Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to you. And we will see you next month. And I will see you actually Monday. I'll see you for Grumbler's Guide, because I always like to.
Yep. So, yeah, if you want to see the notes, watching Lone Wolf, that, so, you've got to come Monday, 7 o'clock US Eastern. Or for Australians, it's 10 or 11 a.m. on Tuesday. I always forget.
And for Drop Bears, it's that's what it is all the time. Anyway, thank you, Saad, very much. And last but certainly not least, Tren, again, thank you. And where, same question to you, any last words, and where will the folks find you next?
Hi.
Hi.
And where will they find you next?
Oh, yeah, that's probably a good question, too. I think here on Tuesday.
You are right. For the last Adventures of Middle Earth of the year. Okay, you passed the test.
Like, good.
Hardest question of the night,
apparently. I would diminish and go into the West.
As a reward for getting that question right, can I also know when we're doing the reading of the Ghost of Christmas Cup?
That is going to be a week from this
I'll tune in for that.
Did you say
that's
Ghost
a totally
of Christmas
different interpretation
what?
Of the story there.
Nothing Ghost of Christmas Go Fuck Yourself. Stands around pointing at things.
Oh, jeez. You know, you know who we always get in chat, and I'm hoping we will, right around that time, is Ghost of Christmas Future always shows up in chat and just goes dot, dot, dot a lot, and it's the best. I really hope that happens again. So we will see. But anyway, yes, so you will see Trend for the last Adventures of Middle Earth of the year. That'll be this Tuesday. And yeah, so that's what we'll have. Gentlemen, it's been a great pleasure. Chat, can we get some love for Little Red Dot, for Don Cairo, for Margaret Crone, and for the players that you see here tonight, for a wonderful session and really thoughtful, provoking answers and all that. Trende and Saad, John and Rob. Gentlemen, thank you so much. And I will see you folks all very soon.
Tschüss.
Bye. See ya.
Hi, everybody.
And that, folks, is also going to do it for us for this evening. Let me just close out here. Thank you as well to Greenforge Studio for the music that you heard playing during this. Yeah, that was great. I didn't know that we were going to have enough to do a long postmortem, but as it turned out, boy, was I wrong. It's probably good that we didn't do more of a session zero of Palace of the Red Pasha. We just introduced it, and you know, now we're going to get into it. So I am very, very glad that we were able to do this. But that was great. And chat was great. And yeah, I'm very thankful to everybody that this worked out really well. I've said many times that I see D&D as being something more than just a game. I see it as something which is a metaphor for life. I see it as something which is a example of community, and it's a real way to bring everybody together. It's been great. And my fervent wish is that we continue to grow the campaigns, and that we get more and more people in here, and more people watching, and more people excited about what we're going to do in the future. Because you know, I love Dungeons and Dragons, and I love role playing, and I love doing it with this crew. It's wonderful storytelling, and very, as I've said, healing for me. So it was really good stuff. So yeah. So nope, you got Fifely right. That's 100% right. So thank you, chat, for all of that.